Seriously, dude, thank you so much for doing this. Like, you just, guys, John just came back from a show. It's a Wednesday night. It's 11 p.m. He just finished playing a round of golf in Vegas.
Yep.
And
Some money laundering.
Some money
laundering.
A round of golf in Vegas.
You know, I really want to say this to you. I don't remember this before the pandemic, but the moment between you and Frankie, you know, during the Planet Twando segment in the middle of Ragdoll,
mm-hmm.
You know, what have you been up to these days? And, you know, you as Tommy, you say, you know, a little bit of this, a little bit of money laundering. And the it's such a charged moment, especially between you and Aaron, because he like looks away. He like shakes his head like, you know, that same fucking bullshit. And I
does he? He's like this fucking guy.
Yeah. And it's
just, I don't know what anyone's doing. I'm just staring into the sun.
Staring out into space. Exactly. But I just didn't remember that specific reaction from him to you pre-pandemic. And so it just made so many things you guys are doing once you came back has been,
it's because he's so sick of my blow dryer. That's what he's playing. He's like, God,
that's why
this fucking guy.
He's using the pain and the agony and the anguish. I'm like, what the fuck, yeah, man?
You'd be like, why are you so mad at Tommy? He's like, Tommy? Oh, John? Yes.
Yeah. You're the reason our electric bill is so high.
I know.
That's awesome.
Well, no, that's I kid. That's very sweet of you. I'm glad it's playing. It's good.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
It's just there's also one other specific moment that really jumps out at us when you say when
go on.
Yeah, go on. after the whole gunshot in the car, when he's coming to you for help, and mm-hmm. you know, and he mentions Jip the car. You mentioned that name, or you don't bother Jip the car with too much bullshit.
Yeah, you nuts. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you nuts, and then you tell him go home and make your wife happy. We've never seen anyone play it like go make. It's like some sort of jab at him and jab at it, and it's sort of like,
oh, it's all a jab at him. It's all a jab at him. He jabs at him the whole time. He jabs at every. I mean, from the very beginning, you know, I sat down with Dez years ago when I was just covering it, and just the whole thing is a jab from the very top. You know, the whole thing, not to cut you off, but it's all
no,
part
please.
Of it. It's like, you know, from the very top, they just said it. Like, imagine, because there's this debate, like the direct addresses, we call them when you talk to the audience. That's sort of what we as the company call them, like the monologues, but the direct address moments, as opposed to indirect address when we're back on stage. It was all like, because we're debating, like, when is that? Is that when they're younger or when they're older? So in theory, we're not playing it as we're older, but the point is it's around the time of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. As if it shouldn't feel like this, but it's just something for the actors to play something, you know. Imagine you're at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and the four of us were together and someone's like, hey, we're thinking of like putting together like a book or a show about your lives and we're going to interview all four of you. And I go, I'll go first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And everyone's like, great. I was like, I'll go first because I want to squash every little bit of everything I know they're all these fucks are going to say about me. You know, so the whole show, I'm immediately digging. Yeah, yeah. You know, you want to know what happened? I was the first one there, and it all started with me. And then everything, this kid who sings like an angel, this kid, I call him a kid like 1,000 times, you know. And I keep downplaying, like, I know they're going to say ba 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 ba, but he was a fucking kid when I met him. Remember that. So when you hear his bullshit story, remember this was a little kid who said, you know. So the whole time I'm jabbing him 1,000 times. Hey, Frankie, give the kid a haircut.
Yeah.
That was,
you know,
so that's a bit, that's also a moment that we, because this is something I owe, all these realizations happened when you guys came back, because you're honestly, man, like you fit to Tommy like hand to glove, man. And this one moment that really stands out to us is when you say to Frankie, give that kid a haircut, you know, so of course,
all right, yeah.
now understand, like, everything is a jab, everything is a jib, everything is whatever. But like, because this is the first moment that Frankie has defied him in a way, right? Like, he's like,
yeah,
get yourself another lead singer. So it's like, you want to defy me? Go give the kid a fucking. So it's like, how are you directed? How do you feel? How do you in that moment?
How are you directed? I don't even know how you're directed. You know, that's such a sort of small moment. You're not necessarily directed. A lot of the moments you're not directed unless they fucking hate what you're doing. And then they give you direct. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right.
They let you go play and then they're like, cool. This moment sucked. So, and then they explain it to you a little more. You know what I mean?
Okay.
They like to think they cast someone smart enough to figure it out on their own. You know what I mean? It's like even like joke deliveries. They'll never give you a reading on a joke unless you just botch the joke enough times. And then they're like, okay, why don't you fucking try this? But that moment, there's a couple ways to play it. I mean, you could just play it as, all right, look, if we have to work with this stupid young kid, at least fucking cut his hair and make him look better. You know, but I think really the jab is him making fun of the fact that he's a barber.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And initially, because he sees that these two are in love with each other. So I think the smarter choice is you play like, hey, Bob, welcome to the group. Hey, wait, by the way, Frankie's also an idiot and he's a barber. Isn't that lame? Mm-hmm. You know, like on the initial, right. Like, welcome to the group. And this kid's lame. Okay. You happy? You guys happy? You're lame. You're young. And he's a barber. Cool. You know, just right. To like try to fucking spoil it out of the gate.
Yes. It's, you know, all subdued
and
stuff.
Then, and then he brings that back when he's talking to Lorraine, you know, mm-hmm. You know, I don't know.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is so interesting.
And he says hairstylist, but, right? When he's talking
about hairdresser. Frankie tell you he was studying. No, to be a hairdresser. That's what it's so fucking, you know, it's so, at least to Tommy, it's so feminine. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. not that it should work that way, but to Tommy, it does.
Well, I have to say, so John, the way you're explaining everything is just like how David Chase talks about The Sopranos. Because I was watching just, you know, that's like how it was written and the whole thing.
Right.
And he said that The Sopranos isn't about what's said, it's about what isn't said. So when he was writing The Sopranos, it was all about like, how can I allude to something but not actually say it? And it's very similar to how Tommy's written.
Well, that's the charm of those mob movies, isn't it? You know, and
yeah.
Dez always talks about, well, you know, the show just also just came out at the perfect time. When it came out, Sopranos was on top of the world, and mm-hmm. even movies like Goodfellas were still hot enough. And, you know, just the mobster scene was so popular. So the show just bought into all that and it was so perfect. Because what Dez loves is these guys or mobsters in those movies normalizing this ridiculously horrible behavior. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And that's what's so weirdly, The Sopranos is the same way. That's what's so weirdly charming about it. You know what I mean? Like, they got a revolving door in this place. My brother, guys from the fucking neighborhood. It's crazy. You know, and then like, good, you know, good fellas. They walk in with a suitcase full of salami and shit like that, you know? The craziness of us normal people watching these guys normalize jail and crime and in some cases murder and, you know.
Right. It's intoxicating. You know, it's like they'll murder someone and then they'll go to church on Sunday, you know?
Yeah.
That's being Italian.
And that's
my family. I mean, not that I know anybody killed anybody, but
and then if it
happens, not my family, but just kidding.
Well, you know, and then if you're Meyer Lansky, you kill someone and then you go to the temple, go to the synagogue on the Sabbath, and it's and Norm says, you know, we like their songs. If there was anybody else, that he'd already be in the hospital. You know, it's just
exactly.
That's just like, what the fuck?
It's the loyalty.
Yeah.
To like, yeah. It's
just so nuts.
Yeah. But like you said in the newjersey.com in your article how with Tommy specifically, like he's not violent, you know, he's just scheming. And I thought that was really interesting that you used that word.
I guess what I was talking about in that was she was asking me about casting and this idea of I was Norm you know, for whatever it was, 7 years or something, and I've been chasing this part forever. And how I never got it. And I always sort of wrote it off because, well, actually they told me literally that they just didn't think I was the right type physically. They didn't think I was, when I walked into a room, I didn't sort of have the weight or the presence of it. I mean, I was always kind of a very scrawny guy. I'm not particularly tall. I'm not particularly, you know, muscly. And not that everyone was a big meathead, but guys were a little thicker, a little bigger than me, stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And Jamar is bigger than me. Not that Christian was all that big. Christian wasn't very tall, actually. But what I was defending is because I used to cover Tommy forever, and some of the bigger guys would play him just kind of angry and tough, you know, which is great. There's nothing wrong with that. But I'm just like jokester, fun, optimistic guy in real life, you know? So there's nothing. And I grew up with two older sisters. I never had a little brother to beat up on. I was the one that everyone in town beat up on. And so there's just nothing tough about me. So I had to approach it different, you know? So I had to play him a little more con man scheming, because I couldn't tough my way to get anyone to follow me. So I would have to con everyone into following me.
Your performance specifically always reminds me of Loki from the Marvel Cinematic. Do you watch the Marvel movies?
I kind of don't.
It's okay.
But go on.
So there's this guy named Loki. They call him the God of
Is music. He on Seinfeld? Then I never saw Your character is how people speak of you. You know what I mean? And Dez is always big on saying, Dez's big thing is the court makes the king. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? If you're a king, you could walk out with a crown and a fucking cape and a fucking scepter and play, I'm kingly. But what really works is when everyone else bows when you walk in, or when, you know, when the women go, oh, or the men are like, oh shit. The way the whole chorus reacts to you does way more for you than anything you could ever play. And it's the same thing when you're analyzing a script. You know, instead of coming up with, I think this character, blah, 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 what does the script say? How do other people talk about him? Or what does the script tell you when describing his past? And when the judge is reading crimes, there's no murder, or there's no like grand theft auto. You know what I mean? It's all like petty theft. It's like, what does the judge even fucking say? But it's all like robbing liquor stores and like fraud and like forged documents. It's just stupid shit. You know what I mean? He's not killing people.
Right. Well, thank you so much for saying that. Yeah. Cause I feel like
he's sort of robbing a bunch of candy stores is his rap that he has in jail, you know?
Yeah. It's like, yeah. Petty stuff. But it's funny because like you said, because like we're younger, you know, it's just easier to say, oh yeah, Tommy's the villain character, but of course he's not. Right. But when you're in conversation, just to get people to like, honestly, like to shut up or just to continue the conversation, like that's what people will say, even though it's wrong. And what's going to say?
You guys are big. You guys are big Tommy supporters. You're on Team Tommy.
Of course.
While doing this podcast, we have just uncovered so many things about him that we just, you know, and we just want to clarify that whenever we talk about the character, whenever we say Tommy or Frankie or Mary or Nikki, or if, unless we say specifically we're talking about the real life characters, we're it's talking always about the characters in the script. Just for everyone who's listening, just so
sure, watching. I understand. Right. I understand.
Like, but with the conniving though, like this does lead to a question. Like, is Tommy smart? Or is he trying to work his grow into being smart?
I think he's smart. I think he just knows what he knows. You know what I mean? And right. And I talked to Christian at a couple parties, a couple Jersey Boys sort of 10-year anniversary parties and stuff like that. Christian Hoff. And I always pulled him aside and tried to get him. I was terrified of him because I worshiped him so much when I saw the show. But he was very sweet. And he would always talk to me. And he's just like, he's not a bad guy. It's just all he knows. And he, to his dying day, thinks he's doing the right thing. And he just doesn't understand why fucking people are giving him such a fucking hard time about it. Mm-hmm. Because if he didn't do all those things, it wouldn't happen. You know, and it doesn't mean they were good things or bad things. We all know people who do things and they think they're doing the right thing.
Right.
He thinks he knows what he's doing and it's working, and they got fucking famous. So he kept doing it. You know, if I didn't borrow that money, we wouldn't have recorded the fucking album. So we wouldn't be famous, you idiots. Sorry, I got in debt and we almost died. But wouldn't you rather have an album? And they're like, no,
exactly. Like,
I would, you know.
And
so, it's like, but did you die, though? Like, that's like the modern equivalent of what happened.
What always kind of made me mad was Tommy saying, I don't know what the fuck we're doing here. You know, you make me look like an asshole. You make me asshole or idiot.
Asshole.
You know, the rule is in Jersey Boys, if it's between asshole and idiot, it's probably asshole. So yeah. You make me look like an asshole. You know, you do that all by yourself.
I'm doing here begging Chip for help. You make me look like an asshole.
Yeah. That always made me so mad. But so when he says, I don't know, Jib, it just kind of crept up on me. Is that just something that he says? Like, oh, like, I mean, I just got to come up with some sort of excuse of why they're sitting there, because I don't know what the fuck we're doing here. So
he's just embarrassed that they're there. Mm-hmm. You know, he's just embarrassed that they're there because he's going to Jip and say, hey, you know, Frankie's in trouble. This kid screwed up because he's an idiot kid. But he never wanted to be the one who screws up.
Right.
You know what I mean? Jip, can you help us? This fucking idiot kid did this thing in the car. You'd be better at it than me. But like, he never wanted someone to go, hey, this fucking idiot Tommy needs right. help, Jip. So he's just embarrassed. And he's like, Tommy, what the fuck? And he's like, I wasn't even thinking. It's a whole, you know, and he's just embarrassed.
Whatever, but yeah. So
of course, but like you said, like, but he, in the sit down scene, he never throws Frankie under the bus or anybody under the bus. He just says like, it just crept up on me, you know. Like he didn't automatically. Yeah. I think that's a stand up thing to do, you know, because when, you know, well, like, to quote like Tommy in the movie, it's like, yeah, crucify me, right? You know, so he did that in the movie.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So I love that perspective. That's really cool.
So, well, they're his boys. I mean, they're his boys. He wouldn't throw them under the bus. I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, well, I could fuck with Frankie, but if anyone else did, I'd fucking kill him. You know what I mean? It's like one of those, you know, it's like we can do it at home, but fucking if anyone outside of the home touches him, I'll kill you. And he means that. It's not a good way to live, but it's what he thinks. It's all he knows, you know?
Right. So when he gets sent off to Vegas, obviously when he comes back, you know, in Ragdoll, things seem to be okay. But do you think he would, you know, obviously we're talking about stuff that's not on stage right now, but when he's in Vegas, do you think he's like upset? Do you think he's just trying to think of ways to get back at him? But because I mean,
absolutely nothing. He thinks it's the fucking best. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I fucking told you. I fucking told you. Mm-hmm. Look where we are, dicks. Yeah. We're fucking, you know, and they're like, blah, 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 blah. You know, and then he has the redeeming moment. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole speech when they break up is like, Frankie's like, you never asked about my kids, fucking blah, blah, blah. So he's like, I'm sorry about your daughter, friend, you know? Yeah. So it's a little redeeming moment so you don't go home hating him. But no, he thinks he doesn't care. Everything's great. Nothing got fucked up. Remember, I told you it would all work out. We're in the Rock Hall, you know? And they're like, we've been paying off your debt for 1,000 years and you're fucking in jail. And Nick is who the hell knows? And he's like, who cares? Look where we are now.
We're here. Right.
That's all I play. I mean, I'm sure you could play more than that, but I think that's what he's thinking. We won. That. We fucking won. What do you mean we lost? We won. We're in the Rock Hall. That's all he's thinking.
Yeah. See, Tommy keeps it simple. And so, but.
Keep it simple, stupid. Kiss.
What? Wait, I don't know that one.
So
kiss.
I know one night we were just, me and Gia were just like, you know, just saying random lines from the show. And I mixed.
As you guys do. Sit around naked with candles and just like close your eyes and say lines to the show to each other.
How did you guess?
I dig it. No, I did. I dig it, man. That's cool.
We do have jobs, by the way.
I mixed up two lines. I said, Mr. Subtle, huh? Kind to animals.
Mr. Subtle, huh? St. Francis,
is that it? Kind to animals.
Well, so with the Jersey Boys live with the movie, can you tell us anything about your experience legally?
Yes.
I don't even know if that's what it's called. Jersey Boys live. I don't know what it's called.
I know it's what it says on IMDb.
Whatever. It's, you know, yeah. So IMDb happens to say, you know, Jersey Boys.
Exclamation point.
Yeah.
I know. I wonder. We were calling it Jersey Boys live capture, but certainly that's not going to be the name. Right. Yeah, I think, you know,
Jersey Boys.
So do I. It's not right. It's not called like Hamilton, the live capture moment. It's just called Hamilton. Legally. I mean, there's not much to say. It was really great. It's gonna make you really happy. It was made and put together, very hush hush. No one knew it was happening until they called you and said, "Could you be there in a month?" And you're like, wow. "For what? What?" What? I mean, it was a very small group of people who knew this thing was happening until it happened. And I think it happened because of pandemic life, because the Hamilton thing was such a big deal, and because the film did such a not perfect job at bottling this great show. Mm-hmm. And I think Dez loved what they did with Hamilton, where they finally figured out how to get this like live capture thing really cool, where it's not just cameras in the back of the theater, like you're filming your like nephew's middle school play. You know what I mean?
Right.
They finally figured out a way, you know, and now even 10 years ago, Broadway commercials were so lame. It just never worked, right? It just never looked right. You're like, oh, that's not what it looks like. But now they're starting to film them so theatrically where it feels like a movie. Even the Jersey Boys commercial looks nothing like the fucking show.
Right.
I mean, you know, but it's exciting. Right, it looks
right, exactly
that my wife is in. My wife's the blonde one in that commercial.
Yeah.
My wife's the one that's not Jenna in that commercial.
On the couch.
I think it's Leslie, Jenna, Candy, and Katie O'Toole.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No, they're all, and they were great. And Leslie was great in it. And so, and, you know, I think Dez was just really excited to bottle the show in this new genre. And I think we really did it right. I mean, I'm sort of fudging these numbers, but I think Hamilton had like 9 cameras when they were filming it. And we had like 16 and at times more, and like all kinds of crazy crane shots. And I mean, we really shot it cinematically, like really cinematically. We did a bunch of full runs, and then we did a bunch of days of just little moments like it was a film. I mean, we're doing the sit down, and we did like a whole million passes of it with like a camera like on my shoulder and stuff like that. Like it's a film, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when Nick's talking to me, it's like the back of my head and Nick, you know, so it's shot really cinematically. It's not just cameras in the back of the room.
We can't wait.
It's the exact stage show. It was the exact stage set. Okay. It was just at this big theater. So it was a kind of big set. But there was nothing film about it. It was just the fucking set of the show with the same automation of the show, the same costumes of the show, the same lighting as the show. The camera guys brought in some more heavy duty lights and put them out in the house, but that's it. They didn't like pull punches to change it and make it jazzier or anything like that. Jazzier. It's not like my mom. Like, make it jazzier. And Nick Jonas has been a Jersey Boys super fan forever.
Ever, yeah.
Yeah.
We know
he that. Really has. There was talks when I was in the Broadway, forgive me for cutting you off. When I was in the Broadway show like 5 years ago, there was like talks of Nick Jonas coming in. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, like him like maybe coming in has been talked about forever.
He did some sort of Frankie Camp, I know, at one point.
Mm-hmm. We heard about that.
Right. I think Smitty played with him a little. On something.
Oh, okay. We've heard about Smitty through like here.
Jonathan Smith, yeah.
Jonathan. Okay, okay. Who is he exactly?
A music guy. He's a music guy.
He's one of the music guys. Okay.
Well, anyway, well, more about you. We're here to learn about you. So
you're a fucking amazing musician, man.
Look behind, guys.
Look at his basement. I see 2 drum sets. I see.
There's 4 drum sets.
There's 4 fucking drum sets in there. I see congas, bongos, a million guitars, amps. Is that a cajon? I see also.
It is. Yeah.
Behind you.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And over here, there's you can't see it. There's a church organ with the pedals that work and a upright piano.
Wow.
Amazing. And guys, go to his Instagram. And see all his videos. He puts his phone. He rigged his phone that he can put it on top, so you can see a bird's eye view of him playing the drums. It's so cool. You did. I always wanted to cover it, but I just never could find the time. You released a little music challenge during the pandemic.
The Rio challenge.
Yeah, the Rio challenge. And I was so nervous because I wanted to do something with it. But I asked you, oh my God, is there like a time limit for this challenge? Just fucking do it, whatever.
There was no any limits for anything. There was no rules at all. No.
And so
it was a bored drunk guy posting videos on Instagram. That's all.
So you're an amazing musician, and you found a way to combine your love for acting and your love of music. And when we look at the roles that you've gravitated to, it's roles that you can combine those two loves. And what was that journey like, kind of finding that lane for you?
Well, yeah, it was sort of my way in. It was my way in, because I in life, picture this, 1980. I was a drummer my whole life. I was a drummer long, long before I was an actor. I was a drummer since I was like 10 years old. I took drum lessons and was in the high school band, and then was on the drum line. And my high school had a very big marching band program, Hanover Park High School in East Hanover, Golden Hornets. My high school was also on ESPN years later for a steroid scandal. But clearly not involving me. But and then I went back and I used to teach drumline at my high school and stuff like that, and write all their drum parts and stuff like that. So I was a drummer forever. But then I slowly got into acting, and even when I went to college, I went to Rutgers, and I wasn't even that into acting, and I thought I wanted to go for acting, but I really had no formal training, and all I did was do a couple musicals when I was younger, when really a bunch of plays. I did a bunch of plays in school because I thought singing was lame, and I wasn't even in the choir because I thought singing was lame, and even though my father was a singer and stuff, but I just wanted to be a drummer. I was like, no, I'm not a singer. I'm a drummer, man. I guess I can act, but then I want to drum. So I even applied to BFA programs. I applied to the BFA program at Rutgers and the BFA program, I think, at Penn State and NYU, and I didn't get into any of them because they're like a monologue. It's a monologue, you know. So I like picked a scene from the movie Major League or something like that, you know. they meant Hamlet, and I'm like doing some baseball movie monologue, and they're like, cool. So no. So I even went to Rutgers. I just had a BA in theater. I got all my experience from being in sort of extracurricular shows, doing summer shows. And I always interned and like worked my way up the food chain at the New Jersey Shakespeare Festival in Madison, you know, and I used to do a lot of Shakespeare and a lot of just sort of straight acting. But anyway, so once I graduated, you know, it's not as easy to just like, I'll just go be a famous Shakespeare actor. There's a lot more work in like musical theater, especially when you get to New York. You open backstage and there's a billion auditions for Oklahoma and stuff like that, you know, and then one Shakespeare audition. So I started going to a bunch of Shakespeare auditions and I wasn't getting stuff because there's a million people for like this one gig, you know, but there was a million musical theater auditions, but I was never really a trained singer. And I was just, thing I was the most confident about was drumming. Drumming, I knew I was good at. I put in my 100,000 hours or whatever the fuck it is. And then I started realizing there was these shows like the Buddy Holly Story, where there's a guy who's literally a drummer in it and plays drums for real, and then also acts a little, you know? And I went to one audition for that and they scooped me up. And then I ended up just doing that show like 13 times in my life. And I ended up meeting all my best friends in the world doing those shows. You know, I have this big group of like sort of actor musician friends. And then I got involved with this show, the Tammy Wynette story, about Tammy Wynette, Stand By Your Man, you know, Stand By Your Man, that country singer, that woman.
Yeah.
She has like a, you know, a Jersey Boys-esque bio show about her, Tammy Wynette story. And then there's Ring of Fire, a show about Johnny Cash. And they're all these like actor musician shows. Like Once, I never did Once, but you know, Like Once, it's like actor musician shows, right. And it was just my niche,
yeah,
you know, and I fell into it. And then you get in these circles where you're known as like the drummer guy who could act, so you just keep getting calls, guy. Yeah. And then one day I was dating a girl at the time, and she lived downtown, so we were going to all the cool downtown shows. And we went to see Stomp, and Stomp is just, you know what it is.
Have you seen Stomp on tour? It's the same.
We totally flipped about.
That was weird. That was some weird dark candle shit right there.
That was that really.
That's some dark room candle. That do you guys practice that in the dark with candles?
We literally. It's from Oh Hello. But anyway, so you saw Stomp. Sorry.
No, it's great, and it's the same. No, but it. I remember watching that, and the girl I was dating was like, "Could you do that?" And I was like, "I don't know if I could." Some of the shit they're doing is really cool. And then one time we went to see Blue Man Group.
Hell yeah.
And she's like, could you do that? And I was like, even though what they do is really hard, I don't mean to downplay what no, but just, she's like, could you do that? And I was like, yeah, I could do that. And she's like, no, you fucking could. And I was like, yeah, I could. And then I went to like their website and auditioned like the next day.
Wow.
And then I ended up like, they have this whole long fucking process where they train you and stuff, but I ended up getting it.
Wow.
I later ended up getting fired from Blue Man, but I was able to do it. That's a whole nother fucking story. Because what I'll tell you right now, I mean,
No,
I'm sure no Blue Man's watching, listening to this. If you are, you guys are great. But you shouldn't have fired me. But so what happened was there's a band. There's like a couple of musicians who like there's an actual drum set player and a couple like synth players and some cool guitars and stuff. But then there's the three Blue Men, right? And the way it's broken down is there's center, left, and right. That's what the tracks are called. And it's different like skill levels of drumming, really. You know, Blue Man, they all do a lot of clowning, so to speak, like the sort of no talk, like, whoa, what's going on? You know, clowning acting.
It was
Right. So there's a lot of like clowning involved. All the guys are all at the same level at that. But the drumming, the tracks have little different requirements. And most of the time when you start, I believe right guy has the simplest drum track, and then left is a little harder, and then the center guy is sort of the hardest drumming track. And almost all new people start as a right, and then years later you learn left, and then years later you learn the center. But I came in and I was just a really strong drummer because I just was. A lot of the guys are actors who like played drums in high school, so like know how to, you know. I don't mean to demean. There's amazing people in Blue Man Group. It's just sort of a reality. You guys are great, but this is what happened. And I came in and I was a really good drummer because I just was, you know, because I've been doing it forever. And they're like, oh shit, wow, cool. And they're like, so, and I'm like, what? And then I'm like, what? Are we fucking talking? And I go, so what? We never do this, John. You know, like looking around, I'm like, who's here? Who's watching? No one cares. What? And they're like, we're going to train you on center. Dun, dun, dun. And I was like, okay. You know, to me, I was like, what the fuck does that mean? What is center what? And they're like, center Blue Man, we'd never do this. I was like, okay. And since I was a good drummer, they trained me as the center. And so like in all the tube numbers, like when they play those big like xylophone tubes. That's right. Yeah. That's right. Those, when you're watching the three of them play, it's just like, bah, 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 bah. But in theory, the right guy is playing like boom, 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 boom. The left guy is like do do dum, boo do dum, boo do dum, and the center guy is like ding 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 ding, like playing the all the melodies and the solo lines you're hearing is the center guy. When you watch it all, you don't realize it. It just looks like they're all fucking jamming, but in theory, that's what's happening. And so they trained me as the center guy. So I learned the track. He was the one who catches the marshmallows, and he's the one who scales the building and scales this side of the theater, and he does a lot of the hard drumming, and they trained me at that, and it was going great. And then I started doing the show, and the way it works is once you get through all the training, everyone then goes to the New York show. But the New York show is like the Broadway one, that's like the like kind of premiere one. You do that for a second, and then they sort of send you out to like Boston or Vegas or the tour or something like that. But so I was in the New York one for like a couple months, and then I was going to get ready to get sent out to Vegas actually to do it. Nice. I think it was at the Venetian.
The Venetian. Yes, yep.
At the time, I think it was at the Venetian. And right when I went to sign for Vegas, they like fired me. And I didn't understand why. And they used to do, God, it was like a reality show. Every week you used to go. When you were training, I assume once you're past this training, God, I hope this ends one day, but it never did for me. I was sort of in this long training period, even though I was doing the show, where every Friday or something, you'd go to their headquarters downtown, this like fucking office building, and you'd go up and like sit in this boardroom, and you'd be like at the end of the desk, you know, and they'd be like, well, John, in the Wednesday matinee, you dropped two marshmallows, you know, and you're like, yeah, I know, but there was also 38 other ones in my mouth at the time. That's why I dropped them, you know, and like, well, we like, you know, we normally prefer just like one drop, if any. Like, okay.
What?
So do I, but I dropped two, you know, and then I go through all this and like, you actually got a little of the, you know, a little more of the Twinkie on your shirt than we prefer. And you're like, okay. I'll try not to do that next time. And in that meeting, they just were like, oh, we don't think it's working out. And I was like, right, what? You know, I didn't see it coming at all. I thought I ruled.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I didn't, but I really think it was because, God, I'm telling you way too much, but I was like playing a lot of like drum gigs at night. You know, I was like playing the Bitter End like every other night and stuff like that.
Amazing.
And all those guys were musicians. So I was like putting up flyers and stuff to come see my band and stuff like that. And I think they didn't appreciate that I maybe like wasn't celebrating drinking the Kool-Aid as much as everyone else. I like sort of had a life outside of it. Oh, and I think they wanted me to be a little more like have a Blue Man hoodie and like a Blue Man foam finger on at all times. Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of course.
They wanted you to toe the party line.
Well, and I wasn't not towing the party line. I guess I just wasn't towing the party.
Towing it,
you
know,
of course.
Yeah.
So do you like hate marshmallows now?
No, what was the worst was the Captain Crunch. I don't know if you remember. I don't know if they do this in Vegas. The Vegas, they probably do a lot more spectacle. The New York show is like very off-Broadway-y. It's very small. So they probably don't shoot lasers as much as like
paper into the audience.
Yeah, we do that. We did that.
Oh, okay.
And mind you, this was a million years ago. I don't know what they do now. Now it's probably all iPhones and shit. But it was like we had a box of Captain Crunch and they like reach in and go, hum, 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 and it's like this whole bit. And then they grab like this whole handful and put it in their mouth and go, hum, hum, and it's a whole shtick like that. And they're doing it to music. And it's just supposed to be crazy how much they're putting in their mouth. And Captain Crunch is fucking hard.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like hard and sharp, you know, it's like coral. It's like picking up like, yeah, like coral and putting it in your fucking mouth. You know what I mean? And so the trick would be is some props guy would like, with like a water bottle, like spray it. So it would be like a little moist. So when you put it in your mouth, it's not just death. But every once in a while, they'd like miss some chunks and they'd be like really dry. So you're on stage like, and it's like, and you're just like, oh my God. And like, you just are like, just taste blood because you just destroyed the inside of your mouth.
Oh, shit.
Because you just crunched down on 700 pieces of coral and broken glass. And you're like, there's like tears like pouring down your face. You're like, and this like fucking chew bit goes on for 20 more minutes. You know what I mean? And you're just like swallowing blood and just like crying on the inside. There's sort of a lot of that with Blue Man Group because it's just sort of very physical. And with the marshmallow stuff, you're like literally gagging. You just get used to gagging and not puking. You know, and then you're off stage and
like, John, I'm sorry. You were gagging too much.
Yeah, I know. I agree. I would like to
gag. That's
why
I lost
also.
Two marshmallows.
Yes. Exactly, yeah. You
fucking psycho. Yeah.
Oh my God.
I know.
But no, like, are you okay? What's going on? You know, that's terrible.
I mean, they weren't sedated. I mean, yes, people would ask if you're okay, but it was just, it's just crazy. It was just crazy. I don't know. It was,
it's a wild story. Thank you for telling me.
It was a wild story.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And then flash forward to you.
And that's why John got sued by Blue Man Group, because he went on a podcast and bitched about it. No,
well,
but they're great.
Breaking news, East Hanover High has a steroid scandal, and John Rochette sued by Blue Man Group.
Blue Man Group's lawyer is like, who the fuck is John Rochette? They're like, look at these papers. They're like, yeah, there's no proof this guy ever even existed. We don't need to sue him.
his paperwork got destroyed in the office fire.
Because I trained at center. It probably did. to cover their tracks, they like burned it in garbage can out back. Like, that's impossible. No one has ever trained this center.
Well, good for you. I would love to hear you drum live. Honestly, that'd be so much fun.
You know, and then flash forward to you drumming on stage in Jersey Boys.
Yeah.
I mean, that's sick.
Full circle.
Well, right. It sort of helped me have it be my way in Jersey Boys as well, because he had to play live guitar and he had to drum, you know? And so it's certainly, there's a lot of guys who can do that, but you know, a lot less guys than if they didn't have to drum and play guitar. You know what I mean?
Of course.
Now, when you were playing the drums on stage, did they give you any, obviously you're a very skilled musician, but did they give you any sheet music to look at, to learn off of, where they were like, here, you know?
They did. There's charts for everything. There's charts for all the guitar parts, and there's charts for all the drum stuff.
Okay. That's always a question.
There is. I mean, it's Ron. I mean, there's charts for, if I was like, Ron, when should I blink? He'd be like, give me 20 minutes. And he'd come back with like a blink chart for me if I wanted. I mean,
well, another question. So, also in your amazing musical endeavors, you and your friend Ben Hope, who was in Once, which we talked about before, would play in the subway. Like, so how exactly does that work? Because I heard that you have to have a certain like permission at the audition. Oh my God!
Ben Hope in the Uptown outfit. Nice.
We were playing a gig during the pandemic, and I was like, "Yo, I made this sick sign," and he's like, "No, we're not using that." And I was like, "What? It's cool. It's like kind of homegrown. I made it with marker." He's like, "We're not using that."
Is that the back of like a
for sale sign
or an election sign?
Oh yeah, it's a fucking local election. our candidate won, by the way. Yes, I don't know if you could see on that cajon, the very bottom, it says Ben Hope in the Uptown outfit.
Oh, nice,
cool.
And actually, yeah, I'm sorry. What were we saying? What was the question?
So how does it work to play in the
subway? Play in the subway.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. We used to do that all the time. Even when he was in Once, ever since I met him, he's this amazing actor musician, but he's from Birmingham, Alabama, and he's a songwriter. And I sort of met him. We were doing this gig in Flat Rock, North Carolina, and there was always these like late night campfire party sort of hootenanny things where I'd be playing a cajon or banging on the log or something, and he'd always be playing guitar with all the chicks sitting around him. And I was like, that guy seems cool. And so we became good friends, and now I play in his band when we do it, Ben Hope in the Uptown outfit, original honky tonk music. And we would always just in New York hang out and get drunk and be like, you want to go busk in the subway? And I'm sure you're supposed to have permits. We never had any permits or anything like that. We just went down there and we would just bring a couple beers and just like play in the subway for hours and hours and hours, not sort of to make beer money, but more so it was just something to do. And people would love it. And we would even do it, you know, we'd be there like 2 a.m. and night he had a show at Once, and people would come up. We'd be like in Columbus Circle or the Upper West Side or something. And people would come up and be like, weren't you guy in Once? And he'd be like, yeah. Yeah. And like, what are you doing down here? And he's like, playing music.
That's amazing. That's
people's brains would explode, you know? Oh my God. One time we were outside of Brother Jimmy's near Madison Square Garden. Mm-hmm. We were like drinking in there, and then we ran out of money. This is before Once, when we had a little less money. We were both living up in Harlem at the time, and we like ran out of drinking money at Brother Jimmy's, and we wanted to get another pitcher, so we went outside and we're like busking to get some money. And this guy is like, I'm from out of town, and my wife, he was actually super drunk. I think he just like came from like a Rangers game or something, because it's right near MSG. He's like, oh my God, my wife loves country music. Would you come play for her? And I'll give you like $100. We were going, where's your wife? Is she inside or something? And he's like, no, she's back in the hotel. And we're like, he's like, just come. She's probably not asleep. We'll just come upstairs. We'll surprise her and play a song. We're like, in your fucking hotel room? Certainly your wife's not going to think that's a good idea. And he's like, no, it'll be great. It'll be great. Come on, it'll be great. So we like went back and went up. He was in this fancy hotel, you know, this fancy hotel on like, you know, 30th and 6th or something. And we went up in his fucking hotel room and went in his room. And he was like, knocking out. He's like, hey, honey, what's up? And his like fucking wife in her underwear scurries behind a towel. And it's like, what the fuck, Jimmy? What are you doing? What the fuck? He's like, I brought these guys back. They're going to play music for you. Isn't that awesome? And she's like, what the fuck? So she like gets under the covers because she's in like a negligee or something like that. And then we start playing music. He's like, guys, play. And we're like, I don't think this seems like it's not working. Feels as if there's a little tension in the room. And he's like, no, it'll be great. Play. And there's also a 10-year-old kid asleep in the other bed.
How is he not awake at this point?
Well, I mean, he's awake now, but he's like hiding under the covers because there's two people in the room about to murder and rob them, for all he knows. And one of them's wearing a cowboy hat in New York City.
Was it you or Ben?
No, it was not me. It was Ben. Ben like lives in a cowboy hat and boots. And so we start playing all these songs, and then his wife and son get into it, and we end up hanging out for like an hour.
Oh, shit.
And the guy like gives us some scotch and then gives us $100 bill. Amazing. And we went back to Brother Jim's and blew it all.
New York story.
So, I mean, you know, we lost Tommy DeVito last year. And, this year it'll be 2 years. You know, it's funny when Gary Coleman passed away, they didn't know what they were going to do for Avenue Q, because it's like, I mean, that whole show is very raunchy and very, you know, out there, and especially, you know, for the public. And so they didn't know what was going to happen. But Gary Coleman the actress playing Gary Coleman comes out, and she got a 2-minute standing O.
Oh, wow.
Got a 2-minute standing ovation on Broadway. And
what we were wondering, you know, like because it was 2020 when the show was going to come back, if anything was going to change in the show or the script, you know, to honor the fact that Tommy passed away as well. Of course, we found out that if everything stayed exactly the same,
yeah,
which is great.
Because that's how they honor him, by telling the story and just by
changing anything.
Right.
Yeah. A long time ago, the show, Dez and the writers decided that the show is going to be locked in 2005 when it started. We're locking it then because, God forbid, what if someone else dies, or God forbid something else changes? You know, it's just, we can't, you know, and even at the top of the show, he's like, not bad for a song from 30 years ago. Now it's 45 years ago, you know? They just decided not to change anything. I mean, I think the only thing that ever changed is some guys run for president unless now they say some guys got elected president for less.
Right. Right.
That was the only thing they felt comfortable changing. I get it. You know, it's not supposed to be a modern, the whole show is not supposed to be a modern commentary. It would just get iffy. And, you know, I mean, now with Tommy dying, the whole thing would have to be different. I get it. Right. They're just locking it in place to where it was.
We just had one more question, talking specifically about the, you know, lateral moves when it comes to, you know, especially like a long running show like Jersey Boys. Like Aaron told us that, you know, after playing Joey for 3 years in Vegas, he had to audition again to play Frankie on tour. So yeah. What was that lateral move for you to play Tommy full time? And so like, when was the last time you auditioned for Tommy? Like, so what was that move like?
Oh my God. The amount of times I've fucking auditioned for Jersey Boys. I've been auditioning for Jersey Boys since it started. I went to an open call for like the La Jolla production. Mm-hmm. And then I was just tonight looking through emails. I was in final callbacks in 2007 to replace Miles on the tour.
Oh shit.
Because Donnie was Norm on Broadway. And then like a year after Broadway hit, tour one started, the first national started, and Miles Aubrey was Norm. And then Donnie left the Broadway show. So Miles moved to the Broadway show and they had to replace Miles on tour. And I was in final callbacks for that in 2007. And I didn't get it. And Buck Hoosier Bear got it. I was out at a bar and I just emailed Dez. He was at my audition. I was like, I want you to see me go on. I really think you're going to like it. Would you please come one night when I'm on? I'll let you know in advance every time that I'm on. And he wrote me back. He's like, well, let me know. And so then every other time I was on, it was very sporadic. It was always like, hey, Dez, you know, I'm on tonight. And he'd always write me back like 2 seconds later and be like, I can't come in 3 hours from now. Sorry. And then one time I was like, I know I'm on next Wednesday. And he didn't write me back. And I was like, oh, shit, I emailed him one too many times. You know what I mean? He's like, enough, kid. And then we went to the theater that night and like at half hour, they're like, oh, and by the way, we're going to have a last minute note session. Dez will be here tonight. And everyone was like, do what? And Dez never comes on a weeknight. Like if Dez is there, he's there like Saturday night. You know what I mean? With like a white silk scarf and like looking cool. Mm-hmm. He doesn't like show up to random Wednesday evening shows,
but
you know? And I was like, oh shit. And there was like one, I forget who it was. There was like one friend or something in the cast who I like had told this to. And like, they like peeked out of their dressing room. Like, you know, I was like, and everyone's like, oh my God, why is Dez here? Oh shit, what the fine? I was like, oh Jesus Christ. And it's one of these magical shows where it was this great audience. And I was like killing. Like the opening, like the whole opening, like went on for 2 hours. Like it was the fucking like David Letterman monologue, you know what I mean? And then just like by the end, they were like eating out of my hands. And I mean, I remember at the note session, he was like giving some notes and he's like, John, I don't even think it was as funny as they thought it was, but you're obviously doing something right in that closing monologue. So I, yeah. And then like afterwards, he just like looked at me and like winked and was like, nice.
That is the best thing.
And then I went home and I was like, shit, honey, I think I just got it. And then that was just it. And then there was, for that one, there was no audition. And then they just called and they're like, do you want to just be Tommy? Dez wants you to be Tommy.
And so as you're talking about your opening monologue, my favorite thing is like Rocky Marciano. I love how you say Rocky Marciano. Like, how did you get into the group to say it like that? Like Marciano.
I don't know. I how you say it? How did you say it? I don't know.
No, I never heard it that way. It's Rocky Marciano. Like it's just more
of a bite to it.
You have fun, and I told this to you. I remember after the reopening, you have this Jim Carrey essence about you when you're on stage.
Because I worship, because I was a gangly weirdo dude my whole life, and I just, who was like a wannabe comedian my whole life, and I just worshiped Jim Carrey. I remember in the Broadway show, I used to hurt myself fucking around backstage all the time because I'd always be doing like bits, like like essentially just like weird body bits and like throwing myself against the wall and like falling down. But no, I mean I grew up worshiping Jim Carrey, so I'm sure it found its way into my body. You know what I mean? And like I was telling you earlier, you can't play cool and you can't play tough. And you know, the worst thing ever is if you see a production of Grease and someone's like, hey, I'm Danny Zuko. What's up, bitches? And you're like, eh. You know what I mean? You can't play cool. You're either cool or you're not. And you're either tough or you're not. And you're either intimidating or you're not. And I don't really find... that's right. I am not pregnant, so okay. I would never dare play it. But so I don't find myself to be any of those things. So all I can really be is myself, which is sort of, I don't know, funny, you know, vaguely charming, and good at peer pressuring people into doing things. You know, so and then the
there you go.
That's the skill set that I have to bring to this character, or you would go eh, every time I spoke, you know.
It's honest.
It's just doing it. It's not trying too hard.
I'm
and
Tommy
it's...
DeVito. My hope I... is.
Yeah, right. Tommy, yeah, right. I mean, that's what you don't want to happen. You know, and for years I used to do that. You know, I used to cover Bob and I tried to be so much like Quinn because I thought he was so great. Mm-hmm. And then I used to cover Nick and Nick was hard because I used to always want to be like Bogart, you know, and no one can be like Bogart and no one should ever try to be like Bogart. And it's just hard because you see someone do something and it's working so well. And then, you know, you're like, well, I want to do that. I want to get those laughs he's getting, but it never works. You know, Matt can only be Matt because he's Matt, you know? And so I just have to play this character like myself. And luckily they've allowed me to do that. You know, I think I do sort of make some slightly different choices than maybe customarily, but Dez, especially, yeah, Dez and Richard, when he was around, he really somehow allowed me to do that. I mean, they normally have a pretty tight leash on people just because the show is so sacred. And then they, you know, it's just, if they let everyone do whatever they wanted by now, 15 years later, it wouldn't resemble Jersey Boys at all, you know? So they've had to keep a really tight leash on people's choices. Most of the time for good reason, but they've really given me, I think, a lot of freedom. Hopefully it's because it's working. I don't know, but I've been very lucky with the sort of freedom they've given me.
Yeah. Well, like you said, you know, I think they'll let you do what you want until, unless they hate it, they'll let you deliver the lines.
Right. So, right. Right.
Yeah.
They'll never give you a line reading on a joke unless it's not funny.
I think that we're just so happy that Jersey Boys is back and John Rochette's back and he's
bigger than ever.
What's the Billy Joel lyric? Life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. And now I think it's time for a goodbye again.
Aww.
Or
until, something like that.
Until we meet again. As we love you guys so much and we're your biggest fans and we support you through everything that you do.
And we you.
Thank you. Very sweet.
Yeah, I mean, I think people are really, really open and on board with you guys because you're just very genuine and you obviously know the show and we all love the show. You know, sometimes no one wants to be harassed about the show, but you guys never harass anyone and you guys just love the show and you ask such good questions and you ask such interesting talking points that we all want to talk about it with you. You know, it's just that simple. You know?
Yeah, keeping it simple.
You can only sign so many autographs, but it's just when people have interesting questions, interesting to talk about it because we want to talk about it too, because we love it too.
This is gonna be
beautiful.
Amazing. This is gonna be I think people are gonna
love
this one.
Okay. Fantastic. All right. Come on. Have a good night, guys. You're the best.
You're the best. Bye.
Ciao. Bye.